This is Unlock Your Soul podcast, a platform where we scratch beneath the surface to find out what really makes us human. And today, I think I should start by saying Mafiantahe, which is basically Somali greetings for hello, how are you? And you answer Fian. I am feeling very Fian because I get to learn so much about what it means to be ostracized even before you speak your first few words, because people already have this notion of who you are, of who you should be, and what it means to be Somali or Kenyan Somali or Somali Kenyan. Let's demystify this together with one of Kenya's best stand-up comics, Mr. Adan Abdi. Hey, welcome to Unlock Your Soul with Antonio Soul. I'm at the beautiful Fire and Door at Nairobi Street Kitchen. If you notice any smoke in the show today, it's not because there's hot boys in the building. It's because, yeah, there's pizza being made. So, yeah, I hope you'll stay so you can enjoy some pizza. Anyway, I'm with very, very, very funny startup comedian and also an entrepreneur, a business guy, but an all-round nice person. I am going to be talking today to Adan Abdi. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on the pod. I'm super pumped to be here. Yeah. Stoked.
You're the only person who I've seen drinking cold water in the cold. I mean, it's so cold in Nairobi. Why are you drinking?
I was going to ask for room temperature water, but I was like, ah.
And then what happened?
She had gone. I was like, ah, jeez, never mind.
My goodness. I mean, but are you like that? Are you always nice, even when people like don't get you what you need?
Yeah, I try to be nice, but I'm not a pushover.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It's one of those things. I try not to get in people's ways.
Yeah.
But like, I know what I want.
Okay.
I know what I want.
So, I mean, we have
something like this. This is inconsequential. I was like, yeah. She's gone.
I never thought I'd hear you use big words like that. Inconsequential.
We went to school.
So, let me tell you what is consequential today.
Uh-huh.
And what we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about you growing up Somali. You know, just, you know, sort of those bloodlines between being Muslim, Somali, and also being a comedian, you know, and also your relationship with money and wealth. And yeah, we'll also be talking about wellness. I think it's important for us to toe the line and just get into that conversation. But before that, I mean, tell us how you got into this stand-up comedian. See, and what does that mean? What's the difference between like being a comedian and being a stand-up comedian?
Stand-up comedians, you know, we have a lot of versions of comedy. We mm-hmm. have sketch comedy. Mm-hmm. We have stand-up comedy. Stand-up mm-hmm. comedy is basically, you know, going, you know, performing to a live audience mm-hmm. on stage with a mic.
Mm-hmm.
Stand-up comedy, you're standing up. It's literally in there, in the word.
Yeah.
How I got into stand-up is, I remember I came across some of the videos on YouTube of the English stand-up comedy scene.
Yeah.
I was at home, and this is why I believe there's power in speech.
Mm-hmm.
Yo, I used to look at, you know, some of the comedians I perform with right now in the scene, like Maina Murumba, hilarious cut.
Yeah.
And I used to tell my siblings, yo, I think I can hack this, man.
Yeah.
Yo, I used to speak it out loud. I was like, yo, this is, I feel like I can hack this. If I put in the work, I can hang with these guys.
Yeah.
And so fast forward to the first time I ever went to a stand-up comedy event. I was in a matatu. Mm-hmm. The matatu from the matatus that go the Kenyatta route.
Mm-hmm.
So we were along Mbagathi. I was with a friend. I didn't tell him what we were going to do.
Yeah.
It's called Kevo.
Mm-hmm.
Such a nice cat. Grew up together, childhood friend.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in the matatu. Kevo is like, yo, by the way, where are we going? I'm like, yeah, so there's this comedy thing. Open mic. I'm gonna try it out. when did you start doing comedy, bro? Yeah. I'm like, yo, this is my first time. Let's go over there, see what happens.
Yeah.
Yo, we get to Two Grapes. You've been to Two Grapes?
Yeah, too. In Kilimani. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So right now it's big. We are performing for 150, 200 people on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
You're on two. The scene was relatively small at that time.
Yeah.
We are performing inside the bar area, the room, the small room inside.
Mm-hmm.
For how many people? Remember the first open mic I did, we performed for 8 people.
Gosh.
And about 8-10 people. And about 2 were comedians inside the room. The other comedians were outside.
And probably everyone else was like auditioning.
I remember we had I was the only new open micer that registered for that day. So I remember leading up to that day, I used to text Brian Onjoro, the host, can I go up when I come? So like, yeah, sure thing, come. So I get to that point, and Onjoro does, he was the host for that day, Brian Onjoro, you know him.
Yeah.
He's a funny, funny dude. So Onjoro does 8 minutes on stage.
Yeah.
I used to think that thing is easy. I saw the guy, you know, trying to warm up the audience.
Exactly,
the audience
was
cold.
Yeah.
I was like, this is going to be me.
You guys are like only 3 people in the audience. So, I mean, you can imagine it's more difficult to get them to, you know, to get where you're going.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I was like, I pulled my friend outside and I was like, hey man, this is a bad idea.
Bro, let's go back home to Rudy Nyumbani. Let's go back.
Like, next time I have an idea like this, punch me in the face, man.
Yeah.
Like, no, you. Okay, so he was like, why don't you do your material? So he did my material to my friend. And he was like, I think you have this, man.
Yeah.
Just
go
in there.
Yeah.
So Onjoro went up and said, the next comedian. He gave me such a weird introduction.
Yeah.
And said, the next comedian, I've forgotten his name, but he's a new guy. Please show him all the love you can. Make it loud for... I've forgotten his name.
Yeah. You're like, wow, I'm so easy to forget.
Yes. So I went up. I did my material. Mm-hmm. I got a few... You know, one of those... You know those phantom laughs? They're not really laughs. They're not barely laughs.
Yeah.
But like, it's something.
And is that coming from Kevo who's trying to like support you? Or?
Kevo was like, this is my boy right here. Just to pretend I didn't pay him to laugh at this.
Kevo, how much were you paid to support this guy?
Shout out.
Kevo was like, I'm just doing this for my friend. And he probably thought this my friend is funny.
So I after the open mic, Eric, the founder, the curator of stand-up Punchline Comedy Club Nairobi, came up to me and was like, hey man, you really have a gift here. You just have to keep coming to these open mics and you're going to get better. Looking back, I'm not even sure how that went because I didn't have any reference base.
Mm.
Like, I didn't know what killing was like. I didn't know what bombing was like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I didn't know what to feel. I was like, is this how it's supposed to feel like? What just happened?
Yeah.
So I went home. I had a lot of positives to take from that.
Yeah.
My first open mic, my debut. So I just kept on, you know, going for the open mics, getting better and better and better.
And as you're doing this, does your family know? I mean, how many siblings do you have?
7.
So does your parents are alive?
Yes.
Do they know that our son is out here going to do stand-up comedy?
No.
Because I mean, I feel like I've only met 2 Somali stand-up comedians. I know I will not... That is in Kenya. I won't speak about like what happens in Somalia or in like in the States or whatever. So it's... relatively quite new for anybody, you know, from your culture. Did they know then? Were you hiding? And these things happen at night.
Yes.
So
yes.
And probably there's no football match because I know Somalis love their football.
Uh-huh.
So what excuse are you using to say, I'm going to make people laugh? Like,
When I started stand up, I guess I had the room and the latitude to do my own thing because I moved out. Out of my parents' house. Mm. Born and raised in Nakuru County. So I came to Nairobi for high school, then campus.
Which high school were you in?
Moi Forces Academy.
MFA.
MFA.
Mm. So you're like, hey, you're a choppy, you're a smart kid.
I try. You know.
Yeah, because MFA is not for, you have to be like really smart if you're in that school.
Yes. Yeah. I try to think I'm smart. I try.
I try to be funny.
And
I didn't want to laugh. damn it. Remember how I told you I'm not going to laugh at any of your jokes? That was forced.
That was forced.
I don't want to laugh.
I paid him.
I don't want you to think you're funny. That's the thing. When you have friends, you don't make them feel that nice.
Yeah.
But he's a funny guy. You have to go to his shows. So you are MFA.
Yeah.
I mean, your parents are thinking, we took you to this nice school so you can come and make people laugh.
Yes. No. I started stand-up in campus.
Yeah.
So after high school, came to Nairobi again for campus.
Yeah.
I was a responsible kid because I was living alone the whole time.
Yeah.
So I had that you know, benefit of doubt from my parents. Like, okay, this guy is pretty responsible. Mm-hmm. He's doing his thing.
Mm-hmm.
He's in school. They didn't know. I didn't tell them.
Mm-hmm.
The only person that knew was my older sister. Shout out to her. She's a big supporter of mine ever since I started stand up.
Yeah.
So I used to go at night. I used to keep it to myself. I never wanted even friends to know because I knew I sucked at stand up.
Wow.
Because you never really start out as a master in any art form.
Yeah. True.
Yes. So I knew. I was like, I have a gift, but stand-up comedy above everything else is a skill, Anto.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So I knew I'm probably going to suck for about 6 months.
Yeah.
And I don't want these people to be privy to the moments that I suck and died on stage.
Yeah, yeah.
I used to die on stage, Anto.
For real.
Bruv.
Used to be that. There's times when you are bad, like you are just like, oh my God, I'm bad. Like I suck.
I was funny.
Yeah.
But green. I was funny,
gosh,
but green.
Yeah.
So now I'm technical. You know, as you know, you grow up, you know, you put in the work, you develop instincts, and you know, your intuition as a comedian gets better, and you become more technical with the craft.
Yeah.
But then I was funny, but I was greener. You know, right? Comedy is a very complex art form.
Yeah, it seems simple, but quite complex.
It's all about the subtle elements, you know, like how am I going to set up this joke?
Yeah.
Gonna add in some little misdirection so that I don't telegraph my punchlines. I don't know where this guy is going, you know. So I knew it was going to be bad before it became better. And I'm pretty have a strong mentality.
Yeah.
Willpower.
Yeah.
I knew how
do you view life like that? You say something quite deep.
Uh-huh.
That it's, you know, it's quite, what first is bad and then it gets better.
Yes.
Is that your outlook on life generally?
Yes. Everything gets better with time, Anto. With time, you know, at that point, this is something I heard on a podcast. Beginners and masters have different needs.
Mm.
So as a beginner,
in
any art form, in anything you do, don't try to be technical about it. Just love it.
Yeah.
I used to love being on stage. Mm. I was like, I'm just happy to be here.
Yeah.
Then as I grow older and as I, you know, have, you know, getting more months in the game, more years, I'm gonna be technical.
Yeah.
As a beginner, what you need to do is love what you're doing. Otherwise, if you be, you know, get caught up in trying to be technical, you're gonna dread it. It's gonna be like work.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think that's my mentality. Even you know, when it comes to life. Even in relationships. Man.
Yeah. Like, hey, tell us about relationships.
Yeah, man.
Are you a beginner or a master at relationships? Do you have a degree or a doctorate?
Yeah.
Which one?
Yeah, I'm pretty experienced.
Okay. How many girls have you dated?
I've had my fair share of fun and experiences, but you know, in a nice halal way. And
what was I about to say?
In a nice halal way, I'm pretty social. You know, I've put myself out there. I've met interesting people.
Yeah.
We just sort of shaped how I view people, relationships, and life. You know.
Yeah.
So going back to what we're talking about in everything.
Like how you moved away from relationships. You're like, oh, my mom is gonna be like, this guy's been haraming out here.
Not really. You know, Anto, it's the same thing we're talking about.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? It's like you know, the space I'm in right now with the person I'm saying is a very healthy space. It's like, I've put in work. I've put in work until, you know, when I've put in work, I've put in, you know, a lot of effort and time and sweat.
Yeah.
So the thing I'm enjoying now, this beautiful thing that, you know, we are currently enjoying now, wasn't always this.
Yeah.
It's a product of
exactly
the both of you putting in work, going out of your way for the other person and trying. Yeah, it's like that, even with life. So so when you start something, just, you know, you've got to be willing to soldier through the
I like that. And for anyone who's even like listening, who's like, who wants to be a comedian, who wants to be an actor, I mean, it's important for them to understand that it didn't take you 3 days to be who you are today. And for you, probably the stakes are higher, because from a cultural perspective, I mean, you have to be really careful in terms of like your content. You have to, you're representing like a huge group of people, because then there's a lot of young people who want to be like you, and they're Somali, or they don't even have to be Somali, honestly. They're probably just young kids who are thinking, I want to be like this guy. And it, for them to know that it didn't take you 3 days or 3 hours or like one huge joke that you've been using all along, you're constantly mastering your craft. So I like that intentionality about you. Let's talk about you growing up Somali. And the reason why I felt it was important for me to host you is because, I mean, first and foremost, I have very many Somali friends. And I feel that's like saying I have, I feel it's like a white person saying I have black friends.
I'm a black dude. Listen, I have a lot of black
I have a lot of black friends. So so now I'm not racist.
And do a fat joke. My friends are fat. What do you...
Wow. Guy. So it's the reason why I insist on saying that is because I feel, because of my proximity and, you know, and being close to Somali people, I there's a lot of misunderstanding, including, for example, when we say Somali, because we don't walk around saying your my Luo friends, my Kikuyu friends. I mean, kitchen table talk we do, but like in public, people don't sound tribalist. But you are Kenyan first, but you're constantly put in the box of being Somali. I mean, I want to understand you growing up and some of the misconceptions and just stereotypes that you received as a Kenyan Somali, and constantly having to explain yourself that first, I'm Kenyan, I'm not Somali. Like, and I'm not saying I'm not Somali, but I'm not Somali, I'm Kenyan. So the idea of always being reminded you're Somali, I mean, how that has been for you growing up, seeing it around you at home, whether it's experiences you've faced or your parents, your siblings. I mean, tell us how that experience has been for you.
So I grew up in Nakuru County, born and raised in a small town outside Nakuru called Gilgil.
Gilgil.
Yes, my we have a family home over there. So I the county is predominantly Christian and non-Somali. So I grew up around a
You guys are a city now.
Yes. Yeah, we are a city now. It's
without an airport.
Big thing. Without an airport, we are working on that one. So yeah, so growing up, I wasn't really aware of what was happening. Because we were just kids, you know what I mean? I remember in primary school, we were like six Muslim kids in the class, in the whole class, and three Somalis. So it wasn't a big deal. I was like, yo, this is how life is supposed to be.
To be,
man.
Yo,
my friends wanna Kevo.
Yeah.
The Kevo from stand up.
Yeah.
Kevo used to be my boy.
Exactly.
I used to chill with it. Never used to be a big deal.
Yeah.
I wasn't aware of how big of a deal it was until I came for high school in Nairobi. And yo, that was the first time I was seeing just a lot of Muslim population in school. This is big. And the culture shock, right? Because even with them. Even with you know, my classmates in high school, they're like, yo, how bro, why are you so different from the other Somalis? Why, dude, you're social, you get along with everybody. I'm like, isn't this how it's supposed to be? Because we used to have, because Somalis are different, man. Because I'm a Kenyan Somali. I'm more Kenyan than some of my Kenyan friends.
I mean, to be honest, for me, I feel like until you explain yourself, even the way you speak, you can't tell. Like, you don't have the Somali accent. Do you even speak Somali at all?
Yeah, I do.
For real?
I do, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I came to high school and I saw some of the Somalis from like Somali counties, like Mandera and Garissa and Wajir. They were a bit closed off, you know, like, because again, I'm not coming from a not punching down on them or anything, because that was their life. That was their, you know, everything. Your personality and demeanor and temperament are a function of exposure.
Yeah,
there they didn't have any non-Muslim, non-Somali in their school. So they grew up just around Somali.
Exactly. Yeah.
So coming to high school, that was a culture shock.
Yeah.
For them.
Yeah. So and also for those they are now meeting.
Yes.
Because even for them, they're like, hiya. Or you know, so there's nothing wrong with them. It's just that now everyone is like, hiya, kumbe, this is how everyone, okay, we're not, okay, we're all, like,
It was a culture shock. I mean, even during Funkies, you used to be outgoing because I've been around girls, man.
Yeah. You're there katiaring people and all the Somali boys from Mandera are, we call it, they're breezing.
They're breezing.
They're just chilling there like,
yo, how do you do this?
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean, how do you do this?
Yeah, what's happening?
So you just go and talk. Like, how do you talk? I remember this one guy.
Yeah.
And I swear to God.
Yeah.
So in MFA, we used to have a mosque in school. Mm-hmm. This one time, we were the host of MFA Opens.
Okay.
So girls used to come to our school and
everything. What was your sister's school?
MFA Lanette.
And Lanette, okay.
But they never used to come because they're in Nakuru.
Yeah, they're far, quite far.
So you have Buburu, Pangani girls, Parklands.
That's my sister's school. Don't own them, please. Don't lie to yourself.
You went to Patch?
Upper Hill. No.
Upper.
Patch, their sister school was, I think, Kenya High,
yeah.
I mean, those are just like, I don't even think they were okay being brother and sister school.
Yeah. Yeah, man, you're like, we are not.
So you are this funky. Mm-hmm. Yo. Funky, by the way, means function.
Function,
yeah,
man.
But it's, yeah.
Insider.
Insider
came to our school, man.
Yeah.
So, I remember, man, I used to be outgoing. I was smooth. I was a smooth talker, man, even in high school.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember we used to have our terrace outside our classroom.
Yeah.
I was in Form 2, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So on Saturday.
Yeah.
I never used to play any sports.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember that Saturday I had had on the scouts, nini, top.
Yeah.
Like, you, I'm the scout. Yeah. Show you around.
Yeah.
So we were, I remember vibing chicks from this school. Riara. Used to be a big deal.
Yeah. Because that's like a private school.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, yo, listen, me, I'm going to vibe only chicks from Riara.
Exactly.
Like, oh yeah.
Let's across the rails. Me, I'm not doing this public schools.
Bruv, I got two.
Yeah.
Two. Right? I'm in the middle.
Yeah.
And we are holding hands.
So, look at the joy in your face.
Yo, for some reason, we had to pass next to the mosque.
Uh-huh.
So this guy was in Form 4 and I was in Form 2. He used to be like a mentor of sorts. It wasn't like a consented mentor.
Yeah, it was like,
I didn't sign off on it. This guy was like, yo, I'm your mentor.
It's not consensual.
I'm like, you do realize this is not how it's supposed to work. This should come from both parties.
To be my father.
Yes, this is unilateral. It's yo. This guy came. He was older than me, man. I used to respect him.
Yeah.
Like, well, why are you forcing all issues? This guy came. So we are passing next to the mosque, this small corridor.
Yeah.
This dude literally stood in the center.
Wow.
And just clung on to me. And the girls just let go and kept walking. I was like, yeah, I'm gonna be with you in a second.
Yeah.
I didn't, man.
Yeah, like, what have you just... Why? You're spoiling my vibe, man.
Like, bro, what's up? I was just showing them around.
And by the way, I was about to let all the boys in the school know...
Riara, bro.
...that me, I'm holding two girls. I'm working with two girls.
From Riara.
So what happened? Were you not angry? Like, obviously, you're in Form 2, but you can't do anything.
Yeah. I used to respect the guy who was, you know, ranking...
That's like grade 10. So you're like, I don't know what to do. You can't fight the guy because he will fight you, he will beat you.
Yes.
And you'll be left with him in school anyway.
And I was a ranking member in the Islamic, you know, leadership in school. Muslim society.
Yeah.
So I was like, I remember his name is called Abdusalam. Abdusalam, what's that?
Muslim, whatever you are a cock blocker. That's all. Just, you are a
culture
menace. Stop calling him cool. He's culture. Not cool.
He used to come to school.
Menace to society. Did he come to school if he left Form 4?
Yeah.
Exactly. You see, you are bored. What are you going to do in school after you finish school? Have you met him?
No.
Okay, so nothing will happen.
Yeah, so.
His name is what again?
Abdusalam.
Abdusalam.
Cool chap. No, cool chap. Used to know my sister.
Trying to be diplomatic here.
Yeah, man. So like, what have you done? I was just showing them around and no malice, you know. I'm not even trying to get crazy.
Yeah.
I know myself.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, it's not just, yo. So it was
so
like,
he told you it wasn't, he told you like, no, you can't do that.
It's like, yo, guys. It's like, you, you're feisty and you're crazy. You can't go crazy if you're not. I'm like, no.
So, jeez.
So, yeah. So yeah, I looked for those chiles everywhere. I'm like, yeah. I was like, where are the two chiles?
You couldn't write a letter. You couldn't find them again.
I went to the pitch like 15 times. Like, where are these chiles, man?
It's interesting because you bring up that before we get into like gatekeeping, because that's also something I want to talk to you about in the comedic scene. I mean, apart from that experience in school where, you know, people don't really understand other Somalis and, you know, you feel like there's no space for people to understand you. Have you faced that now outside of school when it comes to, let's say, dealing with either government or dealing with just people? I mean, Kenyans in general and how they stereotype Somalis or even police.
Yeah.
And even just, you know, the way people think like every Somali walking around has like $1 million they have in their bag. I mean,
bro, I'm one of the broke ones, yo.
Yeah, right. You are not broke. By the way, you smell like money. What cologne do you have on?
It's called Opulous Musk.
That cologne.
It's dope, yeah?
You know, I have this cologne meter.
Uh-huh.
So now, you are like at like number... you have at like number... No, but it's also a meter of like cologne what? Like, yeah. So the people who have met, you're not like number 5 of like the best cologne so far.
And you've met a ton of people.
I've met a ton of people. So at number one, who called this? There's a part of mine from Eldridge, he's called Johnny. He's a number one because him, his cologne game. He's just a rich kid. Then there's Sakodie. Then there's Omi Dimples. You're actually number 4.
Omi Dimples.
Omi Dimples cologne. Don't
yo.
And that's the thing again, you're Somali. So Somalis always smell nice. So again, another stereotype. So yeah, people will assume that you have money. So how's that experience been for you now in the real world dealing with being Somali?
It's been and as much, you know, it's easy to play a victim and say that, you know, it's always tough, but yeah, it's that's true. But also, yeah, we have a lot of Kenyans who are man, like very very exposed, man. Yeah. They know this.
Yeah,
it's like they see me doing my thing and it's not even a shock to them. Like, hey man, way to go.
Yeah,
but you know, and also I've had an instance where I did a joke about you. I just go on stage, take the mic. The host is calling me on stage, so I go, I'm like, what's up? What's going on, guys? Please keep it going for the host. I'm like, this dude,
Somali.
It's tricky. I did an AI joke. And I was, this Somali did an AI joke.
Wow,
artificial intelligence, mind blowing.
Gosh,
I'm like, bro, we've gone to the school.
But
man,
what is it? What do you think this stems from? I mean, I know we don't have the age or the impetus to be like, we've been here before, you guys. But where do you think this comes from? Because I don't understand why anyone who's Somali is automatically seen as a foreigner. I just don't get the concept. I don't know.
I don't wanna speak for all Somalis because I feel like I don't have the license. I don't wanna take up that mantle because it's a big responsibility, and this is just me. I feel like, you know, Somalis, you know, we are sort of underrepresented in certain industries like showbiz, for instance. It's like, imagine a DJ, man. Imagine how many DJs have had to figure out to curate a playlist for a Somali performer. It's like, yo, so what should I play? I've had a DJ playing a Somali song. I'm like, well, what in the ethnic profiling
is this?
Yeah, just play Migos.
And then they only play one song.
Yes.
And I love you more than my life. Nakupenda mimi sana. Which, by the way, is like a really old song that ended up hitting because of TikTok. Yeah. But they'll be like, that's the only song that like play.
I'm like, bro, I listen to Afro beats. What's this?
Why did you ask me?
Why did you? Yeah.
And be like, what song do you want?
I went and I'm like, this is. But you know, it's easy to condemn. You know, the non-Somalis, so to say. You know, for not knowing how to be around Somalis.
Yeah.
I don't. Cause it's true. It's exposure. They've never been. You know, around Somalis, they don't know how to, you know, they don't know us, do you know what I mean? So to say, because also, Yeah, so I'm not coming from a point of you guys don't get us.
But also there should be a lot of knowledge. I feel like I know you're trying to be nice. I feel like you're a very diplomatic person, but there should be a lot of intentionality about how we treat people.
Yeah.
We treat people first as humans before we classify them and decide that everything we've had or we know, this is who they are. And for me, I feel movies play a huge role in terms of how they sort of represent Somalis. Because I feel like every movie where you'll see a Somali, they're represented as some guy working in some sweatshop planning to bomb someplace.
Yeah.
Or like some snitch who's ratting out another terrorist.
Uh-huh.
So it's always connected to a terrorist. And even when they show, like, let's say it's the... the Pentagon. And they're showing about, they won't even go to Somalia or whatever. They just show that places where they feel like some terrorist is hiding.
Yeah.
They show Somalia,
Nairobi,
Joburg. I mean, just to represent.
Yes.
And you're always thrown in there.
Yeah.
So the conditioning has been happening slowly.
Yes.
And then now when you've seen Somalis, like let's say building in Isili and all those things, again, the conversation becomes, where do they get their money?
Yeah.
But we don't ask that when our relatives bring V8s and Prados at home.
Uh-huh.
And maybe they're probably a Kemsa scandal, but we will be very quick to judge Somali.
So
we really have to be, we have to condition ourselves to stop being conditioned and be intentional. So I really feel like if you can't call them out, I will call ourselves out.
Yeah. I feel like this is what I believe that, you know, it's up to us to try and change the conversation and the narrative. I'm very intentional with, you know, how I come off.
Yeah.
On stage, you know, do you know what I mean? It's like, even when the host, during stand-up, when the host is introducing me, I'm like, you don't have to say I'm Somali.
That's what I was telling you, like...
I'm very intentional. I'm like, listen, I'm a funny dude.
Yeah.
I just call me, just like you do any other comedian,
person,
any other comic.
Yeah.
Just call me on stage.
Because they won't say,
don't mention
yo, what's
anything
up,
about
up next,
Italy.
Antonio Stoll, this Kikuyu Kenyan, nobody says that.
Exactly.
Nobody.
Exactly. So that is what I'm trying to do. Yeah, I'm very intentional with that. I'm like, don't I don't want to pass off. I don't want to come off as this Somali comedian.
Yeah, because then also you don't want to come off like I got this slot or this shot because I'm Somali.
Yeah.
I'm not a token Somali.
Yeah, true. This is merit based. I'm here because of my gift and the work of Putin. So there's a lot of intentionality from Somalis right now. I'd give them props.
Yeah.
Right now I'm shooting a movie. I'm part of the cast.
Yeah, tell us about it.
Shooting this movie. I can't really talk about it much. But even, you know, just going through the scripts.
Mm-hmm.
With my fellow cast members, like, no, this is not what we want to do.
This is not real. This is not portraying our community in
the light we want.
Yeah.
So change this. So we have a conversation with the creatives, with the creative team, the director. I'm like, I'm not comfortable playing this.
Exactly. And also, it's not factual.
It's not factual.
So I don't want to do it.
Yeah, this is not true.
Yeah.
Change this.
Yeah.
We have this. We call ourselves. Like,
exactly.
It's up to us to push. To push that conversation, the Somali creative, and we also, you know, could benefit a lot from creatives who are non-Somalis like you.
Yeah.
Who are, you know, the goodwill.
Yeah.
You know, to sort of push that agenda.
Yeah, me, I love my Somalis. Hey, my neighbor Fatou, who's like my sister, because I don't have a sister in our home, so my mom considers her like our sister. So I've lived with Somalis. Somalis are the best people to live with, because my goodness, you will be well taken care of. First, the cooking, number one, the kindness, the connections, and just the idea of community. Like, you cannot mess with me.
True.
You can't even insult me. I'm at like your joker. You know, we're having our life. Then one person insults me. Everybody else will come for. And this person is Somali.
Yes.
Has like maybe disrespected me. All of them will come for him.
Yes.
It's never a thing of that. Because I've always had this growing up. But Somalis will only fight for their people. No. It's about who stands with you.
Yes.
And I know where, and I now know where that comes from. The idea of always being other. When you congregate, you have to fight for each other.
That's it.
Period. It's not about that we're relatives.
You know, you look at minority communities in, you know, different countries. You look at Chinatown, San Francisco.
Yes.
The idea of a community.
Yes.
You look at the Italian minority in New York.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the
Somali. Irish community. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Look at Somalis in Isili.
Yes.
It's the idea. It's the idea of being a minority.
Yeah.
It's like, we are we need to stick together. Mm-hmm. We need to create some sort of structure.
Exactly.
That we are protected. We need security. Yeah. We need to look out for each other.
Yeah.
Because we're in danger.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Trust me, I feel very nice when I'm with somebody because, hello. Speaking of which, we spoke about how I was going to ask you about gatekeeping. When that, is it Abdul Salam?
Yeah.
When he decided to gatekeep you.
From Mautamu.
From the two loves of your life. From Briara.
Yeah.
Have you faced any gatekeeping in the industry, whether as an actor, as a comedian, or as a creative? You're trying to get into a movie, trying to play, and then you realize you have to be someone's friend, or you have to have gone to school with some person. Or you just feel like, I feel like I missed that opportunity because these people are in a clique, and I'm not in the clique.
Yeah. There's definitely, you know, some level of gatekeeping in everything, in everywhere, in every industry.
Yeah.
In every industry. I was talking to a friend of mine, Amandeep Jagdeep, super funny.
Yeah, comic. I know the guy. Yeah.
Yeah. So Amandeep was talking to me. So if going by what we were talking about, so if you are very primitive, people would be like, yo, so I have this Indian friend. Like,
imagine. Yeah.
So Amandeep is a super hilarious chap. We were talking earlier, a couple of weeks back, and we were talking about gatekeeping. Gatekeeping is real, man. But Amandeep gave me a perspective that I'm trying to employ in my, you know, frame of mind.
Yeah.
He told me gatekeeping will always be there, right? And gatekeeping also breeds entitlement, Anto. Like me, I really deserve this, and these people are keeping this.
Okay.
You see that aspect.
I never
used to view it from that perspective. Mm. So Amandeep was like, the thing about gatekeeping, and this is what he says: like, yo, you need to stop, quit being a bitch.
Mm-hmm.
These are real pertinent issues that will always be there.
Yeah.
Have always been there.
Yeah.
Right. So you need to shun the entitlement. Don't be entitled.
So don't feel like you have to be in that circle.
Yeah, I have to
you
be in that circle.
You build your own table.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Amandeep was like, no, just become more intentional with what you want.
Yeah.
Try and carve out your own way.
Yeah.
And the universe has a way of making things align.
Mm-hmm.
So we are coming from victimhood to like, no, I'm the hero in my own story.
Exactly.
Yes, this is a real issue. Gatekeeping is real.
Yeah.
But it has always been real. And it's not just exclusive to me.
Yeah.
Anto is going through the same thing.
Exactly,
millions, thousands of creatives.
But don't sit and now look for other victims.
Yes.
So you guys can moan and just
have
sit
a pity
and
party.
Complain.
Like, yeah, this
yeah,
is...
Yeah, pity
is,
party. Yeah, that's
so
true.
This is the, you know... victimized...
Pity Party Association of Kenya.
Pity Party Association of...
P-Park. And you actually, you guys, instead of you guys now sitting together and doing something about it,
Pity Party Association
of Kenya,
they get like an office space in Lavington.
No, they won't get an office. They might be stuck on WhatsApp. They don't have the impetus to, I don't know, be like, oh, you see, they can't even allow us to open an office. They say we don't have enough money.
That'd be crazy.
Landlords want 2 months rent in advance.
Yeah.
So you're complaining about rules. become complainers.
Complainers.
So I like that. That's powerful.
Yeah.
So you take power back.
Yes, take your power back. And take your power back. Become intentional. Know what you want.
Yeah.
And just try and look for like-minded individuals.
Yeah.
You know, whose, you know, vision and yours align.
Yeah.
And everything will sort of, you know, fall into place, man.
I was telling you earlier on that you should model, because now that I know you act, you should also model, because you still have that skinny look where you can just be commercially viable.
Okay.
Then you told me, you know me, the reason why I'm actually like this, until I work on my body.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And I remembered you run marathons.
Yep.
And I was like, guy, you run 21 kilometers. Like, what are you thinking? What, why? Who are you trying to... Who's chasing you?
My problems. Gatekeepers, bro. Yeah, I'm running from gatekeepers, bro.
Or you're running two opportunities to get...
Two opportunities without gatekeepers.
Yeah, so that's about why you run. Why do you run? And why do you run so far? I mean, that's not a joke. 9 kilometers is a lot.
Yeah. I've been trying to sort of build, you know, healthy routines, man. You know, so every day, I wake up at 5.
Mm-hmm.
I have to go to the mosque. I live just, you know, next to the mosque. So we pray 5 times a day. I'm a Muslim. I'm practicing Muslim. Mm-hmm. I'm very spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
So I wake up at 5, go to the mosque, come back home. And that is, I don't go back to sleep.
Yeah.
That's my, yeah. So I decided to, I'm going to do something difficult, man.
Yeah.
I was trying to embrace challenges. I'm like, okay, so this thing scares me.
Yeah, yeah.
The idea of 21K,
yeah.
And that's just, you know, and from the starting line to the finishing line.
Yeah.
So you have like a big nini,
that's
distance to cover.
Very big distance.
So it's like, no, even the run up to that.
Yeah.
When you get to carnival, then yes. You get to the starting
line. Exactly.
It's like, so you're running about 26K.
Wow.
So I was like, I used to be like, this thing scares me, man. But I was prepared. I was like, I signed up for the Stanchart Marathon about 2 months prior. I paid the money. I committed. I was like, okay, I paid for this.
There's a power when you put your money into.
Yo.
Thank you.
Yo, it's like, the Kenyan in us is like.
You're like, that money is not going to go. Money. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I started prepping about a month and a half out. So it was, looking back onto, that was the most beautiful time in my life.
Wow.
I used to wake up. Right, 5, you know, no phone, no nothing.
Yeah.
I go to the mosque, come back home, have cereal, you know, hydrate, change into my workout gear, and go to MOW, Ministry of Works Club, it's in Saudi.
Yeah,
so yeah, just you, the track, it's so peaceful and serene.
Mm-hmm.
You get to listen to podcasts as I was running, to do stretches. I used to catch. The sunrise every morning.
Wow.
Beautiful and powerful.
Wow. And are you continuing with this journey? How does it make you feel, like, in terms of, like, I mean, your body definitely will change because you're gonna get leaner. I mean, you feel like, now I just can't go out eating anything because I know what it means when I put what I put into my body.
Yeah.
But then spiritually and your soul, how does that make you feel?
It calms you because I mean, the truth of the matter is showbiz as an industry supports a lot of delinquency.
Mm-hmm.
You're in showbiz.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get to see people. You know, it supports alcoholism.
Yeah.
It supports, you know, smoking.
Yeah.
And being
reckless behavior. Yeah.
Tabia mbaya.
Bad manners.
I was talking to a makeup artist that were at the set of the movie I'm shooting, and he was telling me, thing about showbiz is, sorry for the detour.
No, it's okay.
Thing about showbiz is, you know, it makes you feel like, it makes you think the world is the same as, you know, how you view it.
Mm.
Like your reckless behavior.
Mm.
Then you get outside there and you're like, yo, it's only people in showbiz that
exactly,
know this is the norm.
Yeah.
People out there are living healthy lives.
And as time goes by, you realize, hey, these stresses I'm making are really messing up with me.
Yes.
Because I'm unfit.
Yes.
I mean, now I don't look as good as I used to before. It really catches up with you.
And also the mental aspect of it.
Mm.
I'm very spiritual, man.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very spiritual. I try to maintain good, you know, mental health,
mm-hmm.
Spirituality, and physical health.
Mm-hmm.
It's the three anchors.
Yeah.
For me, religion is number one.
Mm-hmm.
Religion is a very big anchor in my life, actually.
Yeah.
Without religion, I'd be in the trenches, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd be so bad. My mental wellness would be down there.
Yeah.
Because we pray 5 times a day, and I'm very intentional with it.
Yeah.
So when I go in there, I'm present. I'm like, so God, this is me. I'm talking to Him. It's like, it's like therapy.
Yeah.
5 times a day.
Yeah.
Then you add the, you know, physical activities and just trying to be mindful and, you know, just, and yeah.
Do you feel that there's and I don't want to put you on the spot like that, but do you feel there's a connection between, like, how, you know, we are walking away from our spirit, and not necessarily religion, but our spirituality and our mental health? And I'm not saying that people who are religious don't have mental health issues, but do you feel that there's a connection between literally just walking away and deciding, you know, me, I don't want to do anything with religion or spirituality, and it ends up messing with people's, like, mental health?
I do. Because it centers you, man. I don't want to talk about. I don't have the license talk for everybody,
mm-hmm.
but my personal experience is once, you know, your mental, your spirituality you're a spiritual person, spirituality is in a good place, mm-hmm. you're more centered, you're more peaceful. Yeah. You can then, you know, focus on other things. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? It also, people, human beings are driven by purpose, man. Mm-hmm. Right? And yeah, for me, spirituality is a big aspect of that. You know, I'm like, okay, so this is, before anything else, Aden is a Muslim.
Yep.
Aden is a Muslim.
Yeah.
Before anything else.
Yeah.
I know I've come to, that's why we Muslims have this prayer that we say, God, give us the best of, we pray to God to give us the best of both worlds.
Mm-hmm. Like,
the primary reason why I'm here, I believe this, is to worship God, mm-hmm. man, to worship. I'm spiritual.
Yeah. So everything you do must be in line with that. That's a purpose.
Yes. Yes. That's number one.
Yeah.
So and it's good to know what you are and what you want, because then ultimately all your goals will contribute to your bigger life goal, which is you know, maintaining my obligation to my Creator, and pursuing other things. So even with my comedy, I'm very intentional, man.
Yeah.
There's certain topics I try to.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's not worth it.
Exactly.
It's not worth it.
Yeah.
I'm this and I'm this.
Yeah.
I'm this. Yeah.
I like that. I feel like this podcast, the episode is all about being intentional.
Yeah.
As we conclude, I want us to talk about your relationship with money and wealth.
Uh-huh.
What do you do when you're not making us laugh? I generally feel like you're a really, really funny person, and I can't wait for guys to interact with you more.
You
know, the link is in the bio, like we say.
Link in bio.
You must click and get to know more about Aden. When you're not, you know, making us laugh or acting, how you're ensuring you're paying your bills, you're living your lifestyle, you're out here, you know, looking for your best life and just living the life.
Yes.
You are 14 Stanchart Marathon. You know how do you... because you can't run and you're, by the time you're at the finish line, I'm broke and I did not win. Guys, give me some money for just going through it. And also, Kikuyus are like Somali. So this one I'm allowed to say. Our parents will not allow us to stay in the house.
Yeah.
Guy, you have to go look for money. Just please leave this place. Go look for money. And you moved out way earlier. So you had to look for your own money.
Yeah.
So how do you make your money?
And in terms of, I'm not going to answer how I make my money, but my relationship with money.
Okay, you don't want to tell us how you make your... That's a bit scary.
No, not really.
After everything we've said, you said I'm not going to say how.
Yeah, it's...
Or you wouldn't say where.
Where.
Yeah, you would say, let's be... Because not everyone works for a supermarket. Some of us work in serious places where you cannot mention...
Not all Somalis sell cutting in Sydney. This... Stop.
Can you sew a cutting, by the way?
Yeah?
Can you sew...
I think we are wrapped here, man. Listen, it's crazy.
You brought it up.
Yeah.
I just went along.
And you can't even get mad. You know, my friends, every time they go to Isili, they're like, yo, bro, ule cousin ya for curtains.
I'm like, I don't, who told you?
And I'm like, I can't be mad because this is probably a cousin of mine that sells curtains. I'm like,
so it's okay. It's fine. Keep.
So it's like, okay, but who told you?
But you have a cousin who sells curtains?
Scary, spooky, stop. So my relationship
Somalis are amazing people, guys. That's the bottom line. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. So my relationship with money is you know, people money means different things to different people.
Yeah.
For me, money is nice, man, but money doesn't dictate my happiness until it doesn't, man, because. I mean, I know money gives you security.
Yeah.
And I know people think this is, you know,
just like talk.
Just talk. But this is my mental, this is the space of mind that I employ, that I'm in. Muslims, we have this frame of mind called tawakkul. Tawakkul Tawakkul is a beautiful concept.
Mm-hmm.
It's about leaving all your affairs to Allah.
Uh-huh.
So say when you have money, when you live in the life, business is good. And when you don't have money,
mm-hmm.
you're the same person until.
Mm-hmm.
You're the same person.
Mm-hmm.
Money just gives you the idea. It's not even security. It gives you the idea of security.
Yes.
Like, I can go to this place and be comfortable without the mental torture, without thinking about how am I gonna pay this.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah.
When you don't have money, you'll be stressed.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm intentional with the way I view money,
yeah.
right? I could have a lot of chums, you know, we have faces where
exactly,
like,
yeah,
I'm comfortable.
Yeah,
now.
Like this, I'm balling.
I'm balling.
But
I'm still the same person.
Mm.
I saw a quote from an Islamic page that said, a person that is in his mansion with his cars and beautiful family, in his mansion and cars and beautiful family, in his own compound,
yeah,
under a tree, drinking tea with his family, reading a newspaper,
yeah,
and a person that's floating,
yeah,
on the ocean,
yeah,
on a piece of wood,
yeah,
it's, you know, the waves are, it's high tide,
yeah,
and it's raining,
yeah,
the two of you need God just the same,
yeah,
just as much,
yeah.
So it's like, yo, I have this money, but I'm still the same person.
Mm,
I'm still the same
I
person.
Like that, yeah.
I'm still the same person. And that saves you from a lot of, you know, terrible decisions that,
yeah,
you make when
it's
you...
It's funny you said about the analogy that you came up with. There's one that I read,
uh-huh,
and it was a rich guy on a, uh-huh, on a yacht,
uh-huh,
who was fishing, and he was, uh-huh, next to another guy, uh-huh, on a small boat also fishing. And then this rich guy is telling the old guy, like, Kwani, you don't want to, like, make money and, you know, just, you know, and then when you retire, you know, you just bring a boat and all you do is just fish,
yes,
and enjoy your life.
Uh-huh.
And the poor old man told him, that's exactly what I'm doing.
You was powerful, man.
Like, you're telling me that I should go now, be rich first,
yeah,
then come and enjoy.
Yeah.
What I've been doing all my life, which,
exactly,
is sitting here by the small boat and fishing.
Beautiful.
So it really makes you realize that, and also the concept of how you think we can dictate people's relationship with,
yes,
money.
Yes.
Though no, but Adan, no, you need,
no,
you need know where you are right now. You know, and just the taking away the joy of life and comparing. You should be now driving your Mercedes Benz,
yeah,
so people never now telling you,
yes,
how you should relate,
yes,
with your money. So I feel like that's deep. It's funny because hosting you, and that's the thing I always say, never judge people. In my mind, I thought we're gonna be like really be stupid and silly. So in my head, I was like, oh God, I really hope this conversation doesn't go on a tangent. It's just laughing the whole
time. My feelings,
man.
No,
but you see, I knew,
yeah,
you were deep.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Even when,
yeah,
I was on radio and TV, I may rarely used to host comedians.
Uh-huh.
And not to mean that they have nothing to say, but because I just feel like I don't want the audience to be like, okay, so why is the guy going to make us laugh?
Yeah.
Like, I thought he was coming on as a co-host. So I love that there was a lot of depth in our conversation.
Yes, yes.
That was quite interesting.
And just to throw this in there.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure you felt this at one point, man. You know, the concept of mind that I'm in right now, the space I'm in right now, when it comes to money and,
yeah,
and good things,
yeah,
that happen to me is I'm not shocked.
Yeah,
bro.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I talk to people, they give me X amount of money,
yeah,
to do something.
Yeah.
I have nice things happen to me.
Yeah.
Right? Great,
yeah,
things.
Yeah.
A younger Arden would be like, yo, this is so mind-blowing.
Yeah, yeah. Let's put this on TikTok. Yo,
this is happening.
Yeah, let me go look for those Rihanna girls.
Yeah.
Where you
where
at?
Are they, man?
And where are you at?
Salam, man.
I can spoil you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like now I'm like, yeah. It's dope. But yeah, I feel like I deserve all the nice things.
And, yeah,
and this is not coming from a place of arrogance. It's coming,
yeah,
from a place of gratitude. It's,
mm-hmm,
like and self belief.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, this I'm getting chums now. It's okay. It's,
yeah,
I'm more measured with the,
yeah,
way I view, you know, big money coming,
exactly,
in,
yeah,
and good things, in,
yeah,
in opportunities.
Yeah.
I got this opportunity,
yeah,
X opportunity to,
yeah,
do this.
Yeah.
A younger version of me will be like, yo, this is so sick.
Exactly.
Everybody,
yeah, yeah.
I'm like, okay, this is dope.
Nice,
this
but,
is,
yeah,
nice, but
yeah.
Yeah. That is where I'm at. But
yeah, yeah,
it's like I'm deserving of good things,
yeah,
and not in an arrogant way, but,
yeah,
in like a place of self-belief and,
yeah,
you know, and self-confidence and like, you know, just, yeah, I'm like this,
it's,
like,
it's called
on a pod with
it's
you.
Called silent money.
Not really, it's not even silent.
It's silent money.
Even opportunities.
It is silent.
Talking about money and opportunities. Like,
by the way,
like
it's,
being on the pod with you.
Yeah, is that a big thing?
It's a big thing, right?
You had that.
I used to look up to you. Now I don't because I'm taller.
Fuck off.
Still do, man. I used to watch you on TV, man. Right? and now, man, it's such an honor to be on the podcast with you and,
yeah,
to talk with you and,
yeah,
to chop it up with you.
Yeah.
But like, I'm like, it's nice, Anto.
Yeah.
It's nice, but I'm like, yes, I'm destined for greatness. Yeah. You know, it's like the frame of mind I'm in right now is like my greatness right now can coexist with Anto's greatness.
Yes.
And it'll not feel weird. It'll not feel awkward now.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah.
That is where I'm at right now.
There's also an African.
It's a peaceful.
You're very deep. I'm really genuinely impressed by you. There's one African thing of like, don't go out here telling everybody what you're working on. Because I mean, I also believe that the God we pray in who blesses us, people will pray to God and say, why all is Adan?
Yes.
And he's always gloating. Every time you bless him, he has to just remind us the way I got this deal. Now I'm shooting in Italy. Yeah. Now I'm going to be in Portugal. I mean, we really have to also be careful. Again, the power of the way we do things. Uh-huh. So it also comes with age. And money will also age you.
Yes, true.
Because when you make money, you lose money. You really lose money for a long time.
Yeah.
You realize, money changes me. Yes. No, it didn't change me. I just changed the way I relate with money.
Yes, true.
Now money is teaching me, you think I'll be here forever? Yeah. Nope. It's not gonna be always. So you really have to be careful. You know, when you start calling people and telling them the way you're making it. And as Africans, we fear that stuff.
True.
Because all they have to just clench their ass and be like, this Adnan will never make money again.
Yes. And it's over.
And it's over. And you're like, my villagers are overworking.
My mom. You know what my mom did?
Yes.
My mom is a big proponent of not telling people
Thank
you're blessed.
Thank you. That's my mom and your mom, BFFs.
I was on a TV commercial.
Mm-hmm.
Then her friends were like, yo, we saw your son. I'm like, yo, what?
Yeah.
My son? That's not my son.
Yeah. Yeah, like that's not my son. That's my son's cousin. That's my nephew.
Yeah, that's my nephew.
I don't know that boy.
Went home.
Yeah.
She called the sheikhs. Like, we need to ward off the evil eye.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, Anto, I'm very curious to hear your take on this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's your thinking on how do you perceive nice things that happen to you now and nice opportunities and money that come your way? What's your relationship with the blessings now?
I mean, for me, because I've come from a place of lack. And lack, L-A-C-K,
uh-huh.
where I didn't have these things. So one, there's a huge, and I'll be very honest. It's funny you ask that question because sometimes I do ponder on it. And I'm like, at the beginning, my relationship with money was very bad because I just didn't know how to take care of money. For me, I understood that the concept of money was that when you make money, you should get everything you've never gotten. That's what money is supposed to sustain you. Like you said, it's supposed to, the idea of I can buy a chair today, mine is broken.
Yes.
It's fine.
Uh-huh.
Doesn't mean that you go buying every expensive chair that you've never had in your life. So when you come from a place of lack like myself, and then you start getting lucky with money, the non-preparedness and the lack of financial education, I feel for me is a very huge issue as far as being a creative is concerned. Because I made crazy money when I was like in Siri. I was a script supervisor. I was an actor. I was also working for the production. Then I was in Sugar. I was working in production and I was still an actor. I did shows like Mali in terms of like script development. So I did a lot of that stuff and even I worked advertising. So I did, and then I ended up on TV, you know, on Teen Republic before I ended up on radio. So I did touch and interact with money a lot until I started to make my own choices that didn't involve money but involved principle. Including walking away from jobs that I felt like I didn't want to do anymore, walking away from toxic environments. But because of not having a relationship with money, my now principal decisions were suffering because now I didn't have the money. So now I started to sort of berate and was like, oh my God, if only I'd taken care of money before, I'd be in a better position to make these life-changing scenarios and decisions I'm making. But I feel it was meant for a reason.
Yes.
So I was meant to lack. I came from a place of lack, got lucky, started making money. When I now began to sort of really create a foundation for myself, I began losing money because now when you really become principal and you have a value system, you will begin losing money. And when I started making money in my own terms, now I know better. Now I don't have to worry if I go and we have tea and we pay and I'm busy. I can't wait for the message from Stanbic. So I know if the money is enough. And I'm not saying that I have all the money, but now my relationship with money is very intentional. It is, before I buy myself a new car, do I have shares? Do I have insurance? Do I have a plot? All those things. And it took me the long route, but the better route to learn. So for me, I always say, and that's why I feel for me, this is a very interesting conversation, because I keep wanting to ask everybody, what is your relationship with money? Because it is very important.
I hear you, man. That's powerful. And as a young creator,
and you're the only one who's asked me a question on this podcast.
Yeah, man.
What is wrong? What is your problem?
Listen,
why are you so?
I look up to you, man. You've been in the game.
And I'm not old, this guy. Stop making me look old.
No, but old in terms of longevity.
Oh my God.
In terms of longevity in the game.
The international audience will be like, let me Google this guy. How old is this dude? Because if you say he's watching me since you're a kid, oh my God, this is so wrong. I met someone, a lady, who's got children, who was telling the kids, I used to watch this guy when he was on TV. I'm like, you have children. I mean, why are you telling your kids that? And then someone else I met, he's one of the directors of Bar Next Door. Uh-huh. It's like one of the coolest places in Nairobi. Uh-huh. So he meets me up and tells me, I says, oh, my name is Mwenda. I'm a director at BND. So me, I'm thinking, I don't know why this guy is telling this information, but it's all good. Uh-huh. Then he says, oh, could you come and say hi to my girlfriend? I'm like, oh, me, I'm that celeb who will follow you and go and have fun. Yeah. So I follow him and then tells the girlfriend, you know, when I was growing up, I wanted to be like Antonio Soul. Guy, he was my role model. I'm like, guy, no, stop using words like those. So I beseech you to stop.
So two things, Anto.
Yeah.
Two things.
Yeah.
So number one, I'll ask you this later when you're rapping.
Okay.
It's one of the craziest groupie stories you have.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's number one. Yeah, we'll talk about it later. So when it comes to what you're talking about, how you view money and the space of mind you're in right now, when it comes to opportunities and money,
I
feel like that is what creatives, young creatives need to learn, man.
Yeah.
So, you know, because you when you talk about longevity in the game, you know, it's easy to bust onto the scene, limelight, then you stay a couple of months, then you dip.
Yeah.
But you've been there. You've been there, man.
Yeah.
How do you navigate the bureaucracy, the gatekeeping, and TV, radio, and showbiz in general? How do you do that, man?
First and foremost, I feel for me the not having like commercial hits in terms of like songs or like, let's say, like commercially viable, not having a song like Kaskev Beauko, you know, that's just on the waves and everyone is listening to it. Uh-huh. I feel for me that was a very good thing because it allowed me to, one, work on my niche and the people who actually do appreciate me. It allowed me to push my craft and also allowed me to use music as a means to an end and not the end. So thinking of music as how do I use music to network with people like you and then ask you, okay, now assuming this platform wasn't there, so we've just become friends and you're acting and I'm like, how can I get on the platform? You see, you became my friend because you've seen me on TV and now we're at an event and we've become friends. Now I'm using that opportunity to be like, oh, you told me you're acting. So you guys have like a role for like a guy with rasta ass. You see, now I'm using that to put myself. Instead of relying on, this guy has a big song called Chipsunga or Paid My Dues. He's a big deal. Nobody can touch him. Nobody can talk to him. Nobody can do all of that. So it's very important, one, to really know that this is where I want to go. And decide, regardless of any success or failure that I'm going to get here, it will be successfully forward. And I always believe in failing forward. So even when I've made moves or I've made decisions that I felt like were not up to par, were subpar, I decided that I didn't fail. I failed forward. So I had to do something about it. And I think that's why I've been in the game for a while. And also, to be honest, and like you said, it generally is because of God. There's just, for me, I'm a very spiritual person. I always tell people I have the most unique different voice. I have the most unique style. I am so different from everybody else. But God just somehow says, you will be in every crevice that I want you to get in. Even when it seems like it's the eye of the needle.
I hear you.
I will get you through those situations. So there's a lot of belief in that. And I really do believe that our moms pray for us a lot.
Yes.
I am not saying that those who are not blessed are not prayed for, but for me, I'm a believer in that our moms, when they go on their knees, it's a very powerful. And that's why for me, even when it comes to Muslim religion, there is a huge power when it comes to kneeling down and praying to Allah when you're actually on your knees. So, and that's why even as a Christian, we say, when you go on your knees, you really humble yourself, there's blessings that come up way above you.
Yeah.
So, there's a lot of those things that I don't get to talk about a lot, but I do believe in the power of spirituality and also, again, being very intentional. Sure. And like you said, not calling yourself to a pity party all the time.
Knowing what you want.
Yeah.
That is what creatives need to hear.
Yeah.
That is what creatives need to hear, man. Yeah. Stories like that. Yeah. You know what I mean? You need to know where you want to go.
Yeah.
Right? And you also have to network, you know, try and build rapport with important people in the industry.
Yeah.
And that is pretty much what I'm trying to do. I have like my vision, my body of work. I want to create this body of work.
Yeah, I want to tell us how the next 6 months, it's 1 year, 5 years look like.
Stand up is not everything to me.
Yeah.
I'd say that. I love stand up is my primary passion. It's there, but I want to do acting.
Yeah.
I want to jump onto adjacent markets.
Yeah. Or maybe do workshops for like stand up comedians.
Yes.
Yeah.
I hear you. Mm. So now, I'm looking at what I'm doing from a holistic perspective, from a business perspective.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm funny, man. But how do I put myself out there? How do I package myself?
Yeah.
How do I make myself appealing to corporate?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do I... So I've been very intentional about that. And thank you for this eye-opening insight.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm going to sneak in a few questions of my own.
Yeah, I'm just short. I'm like, what has this guy just done by introducing me and saying, hey, and what is his relationship with money? But I mean, but thank you so much. I feel like I genuinely want to be your friend and I really want to see how far you would go. For me, I'm not interested in you working with Kevin Hart or like doing something with a Rock in a movie. Those are good things.
Yeah.
But I want to hear them looking for you because of this great job you're doing in sub-Saharan Africa in terms of like, one, either it's changing misconceptions or you've got these amazing films that are coming out on Netflix. That's what I want to hear from you. I want to hear that you have a special on Netflix, know?
I hear you.
And it's shot in New York where you didn't have to be like stereotypically in Nairobi or whatever. It's like, I want to hear you make those kind of moves.
Yes.
I want to see you hosting The Daily Show. Without regard to there was this huge audition in Nairobi or Somalia. No, it's because of just how amazing you are that you ended up on that platform. So you owe me and you owe us who love you this very difficult task. Because I want rich friends.
I don't owe you
So you'll be my rich friend.
Yes. Yo, Anto. I've been following your trajectory and your career in music.
Yeah.
One thing that I've observed is, and I'm trying to get into that frame of mind is success should only means different things to very different creatives.
Mm-hmm. Right? Success is very ambiguous.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like what you've said. Like what is Anto? What is Anto comfortable with?
Yeah.
Does he? How many records does he want to sell?
Exactly.
Is he comfortable doing this?
Yeah.
And also being on radio,
exactly.
And TV.
Yeah.
Because I feel like most creatives just succumb to the pressure, to the outside pressure. But what do you really want?
Yeah.
Maybe Anto doesn't want to be this level in that. Maybe he wants to be this level in this level in that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I want to be for me personally. I want to be at this level for this long.
Yes.
Not stagnating. Like, I know what this graph means to me. I just want to do this for this long because then I decide when to... I don't dip. I decide when to go up and when to come back to that level where I said I'm going to work on an album this year. It's out. I've released the album. Moving on. I'm performing in Mauritius. I see me in France. I'm doing my... And you're wondering how is he doing all these things? Yeah. But because while I'm plateauing, I am busy. I am a people person. I will pretend to love someone that I cannot stand just because I know what I will get from that person. Because we're human beings. I may not like you as a person. There's nothing wrong with you. But my vibe is like, I just don't feel this person. But I'm like, this person is going to help me to the next level. So I'll plateau and I will network and I will open, knock on doors and push where I need to push and break down those doors when I need to break them. And get into uncomfortable situations like doing a podcast and doing it on my own and putting myself out there because I know how I want my craft to look like.
Mm.
And that is solely based on me.
Yes.
I do not compare myself. I do not... Yani, it's one thing I've had to work very hard because that thing will give you anxiety and depression.
Thank you.
I am not the next person and I don't want to be them and I am not interested because it will only hurt me. As the more they move, so it's like physics. I'm assuming I know physics. Mm-hmm. So you're here stagnating, and there's a tire that is moving, and there's no force on you. There's no movement. So you have no weight. You're weightless. You're air.
Yeah.
While somebody else is busy building momentum, all you're doing is sitting there washing their momentum. I don't like the way they move to the left like that. Who do they think they are? Because I don't even like the size of that tire. If it was only bigger, you know, you go build your own tire and move. Stop telling people how to move.
I hear you. You are powerful, Anto. I feel like for young creatives, Anto, you need to have a workshop. Man.
Yeah.
See, we let other people define what success should mean to us. Do you know what I mean? Like, you go to America. The comedy scene in New York.
Have you DM Kevin Hart? Like, you know, try and send him your clips. I'm like,
you don't know where I want to be.
Exactly.
My dreams should only make sense to me, man.
Yeah.
So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Going back to what you were talking about, just one more question.
Oh God.
You're talking about you having to have, you know, done some things, you know, just to, you know, pretending to not like people.
Yeah.
So it's one of those balancing acts. Do you know what I mean? You really want to maintain the integrity of the craft, of the art form.
Yeah.
Then also you have to network and pretend you don't like this person. So how do you maintain that level of authenticity and genuineness inside you? How do you stay true to yourself? Like, I really want to this person,
make this move, but this person who's gatekeeping, it's called having a value system. I mean, and that's my value system. My value system is that there's things I'll stand for, there's things I don't stand for. There's a way I must be treated, and there's a way I treat people. So I generally believe I'm very nice or kind to people, and I expect the same reciprocation. And when I feel like I'm in spaces where I don't feel the same, I will walk out. I will walk out where they feel there's good money, but the treatment will make me feel like a slave. I will walk out. I will walk out where there's good money, I'm being treated nicely, and other people are not being treated nicely. I will be the first to call out the injustice. Uh-huh. But also, I also know that I'm not singular in this world. There's a lot of people who control and, you know, just are living around us. So I'm not going to behave like everyone else is an enemy and because I don't like this person. And so I have to put myself and say, there's something that I know. It's called being stoic.
Ah.
There's things or people or situations that I know I do not like. They bring a lot of trouble, a lot of stress to me.
Mm.
But because there's an end game, I will hang on there. I will shut my mouth. I will sit there and I will get what I want. And my mom has played a huge role in teaching me how to be like this, where you don't have to comment in every situation. You don't have to walk away from every situation. You don't have to keep quiet in every situation, but you can hang in there, get what you want, and vamoose. Because that noise you make, that loudness you make, that drama you make, that kerfuffle that you incite, you'll regret when you say it, when you realize later, I could have just kept quiet. I could have just not sent that email. So things like, for example, sending emails, when I'm angry, or messages, I send them to myself first. And I'm like, is this an email I want to receive from someone who I want to work with? Maybe I should never have sent that. I even have a 30 seconds like email like timer. So when I really question myself, should this go out? I'm like, undo. I was doing this when I was angry. I should have chilled out. And also now, it's made me work harder. Because when it comes to things like money, before, if you stay with my money, people in agencies, if you stay with Anto's money, you are fucked. Because I will come for my money. Me, I'm like a Kikuyu match loan shark. You don't play my money. Then I started realizing the only reason why money is becoming less for you is because you don't have a lot of work and you're not putting yourself out there. So you only have one stream of income.
Yes. And you're, but if you're waiting on this guy,
thank you. If you're here like me, working with Unicaf, with Google, with Smirnoff, with NBA, and you're doing all these things, you have money coming.
So you're not even waiting on this guy.
No. I'm like, they're like, a client.
You're still going to call them.
Yeah, there's a client told me, Juzi, Anto, please invoice us. You know, and I was like, guy, you have not invoiced this guy.
This guy is flexing now.
And there's times when you're broke, but you're like, I have everything I need. So it's important for you to have a value system, but also it's important for you to not make a ruckus out of everything that happens in your life. It's not everything is a fight.
Mm.
And like you say, not everything needs to be a victim. Sometimes you just need to chill. You need to breathe and then realize that this journey you're on, if you want to reach, like you're saying, you're running a 21 kilometers race. For me to get to the end of this Sunshot Marathon, even if a squirrel decides to jump on me, that's just, I have to, you know, brush it off and move, because you're going to lose sight of the finishing line.
That's dope.
So it's very important.
And thank you. Thank you on behalf of, you know, young creatives.
All the young
out
people.
There. No, because, because you're old. But it's the thing, No, honestly, man, listen. Listen.
These guys fired. Young creatives, fired.
Mm-hmm. Young creatives, man. I feel like young creatives and Gen Z
are
so easy to, you know, are so quick to throw in the towel.
Yeah.
It's like, this job is not giving. It's because the HR, you know, sent you a passive aggressive email.
Yeah.
They're like, this job is not, this is toxic.
Yeah.
I feel like you need to know when to stay, how long to stay, and when to dip.
Yeah.
So thank you for that, man. Sometimes you just want to, you just have to figure out what this dream really means to you.
Yeah.
And how much you really want it.
Yeah.
You know.
And thank you for allowing me to be also open and you know, and confident that way. And yeah, I'm just glad that we have gone through everything. But before we end, there's an issue. Since you ran 21 kilometers, there's an issue of the Somali athletes.
Yo.
And because you're Somali, there's no way I'm going to let you get away with this.
Stop sending your Somali... Yo, this is my comment. Stop sending your Somali friends that video. Stop.
And especially you.
Yo, my Somali...
Me,
my
I
Somali
sent it
friends.
To every
yeah.
Somali friend I know. I was like, guys...
This is why you guys get...
If you don't know what we're talking about, please watch this clip and tell us what you think about this Somali athlete who decided to represent Somalia in this race, where she basically... This, by the way, you know, we like using the word vibes and inshallah wrongly, because it's like blasphemy. But this is the real vibes and inshallah. Like, whatever happens, happens. Me, I'm going to have fun. And then she even said that she was running because she didn't make it. She wasn't that good because she had a fracture and she's actually unwell, and she did this for Somalia. Somalians, you can never be happy. I did this for you guys and you guys...
I mean, she was onto something, so you can never make Somalis happy.
Let me tell you, she, at the end, the way she just hopped,
yeah,
like enjoy, like, Teletubbies, like whatever happens, happens. I mean, I'm good. It was the most beautiful thing.
Yes.
And it was like, guy, she does not give a shit about what you guys think.
It's like, this is a good day's work. You know, is the thing, man, guys. Kenyans, we are quick to shit on Somalia for that. It's like, yo, Kenyans are like, yo, the ministry for sports in Somalia is messed up.
The auntie is the vice president. I'm like, you guys,
and I'm like, okay, so as if Kenya, the ministry,
it's
of
called
sports
a speck in your eyes,
in Kenya, yeah,
log in mine,
yes.
And now in Kenya,
we're not doing any better.
The sports minister is
for
busy
for both cases.
Yeah,
a pretty chick was hired. For a job they're not qualified for.
Wow.
I don't want to get sued, so I'll not mention names.
Yeah. Oh my God. Oh my God. It's the only race where... This is Somalia. That was really mean. Because the only race where the winner... We don't even know who the winner was. We just know about the Somali girl, yes, hops scotching on...
This is what I think.
Yeah.
This is my take. I think the chick, the Somalis are good runners. We yeah. But I feel like the incentives were just not there.
Yeah,
not the
like
right.
If she's running for $1 million, that would be another story.
Nah, man.
But like,
she's Somali. Just offer her citizenship. Just offer her citizenship.
No.
In any country she wants.
It's like, you, a nigga, would you not run? I know. By the way, in Somali, when you say a nigga, it doesn't mean, because I used to hear that a lot.
Yeah.
Some people say a nigga. I'm like, why do Somalis like on each other a nigga?
We're so proud of our
it means
black
it means you. It
We're
means
so,
like
Somalis
you.
Are
no,
so proud of
a nigga
our black
means
heritage.
You. So thank you, a nigga, for watching Unlock Your Soul with Anthony Your Soul, and thank you, Aaron Abdi,
yeah,
for
you.
Coming
thank you
through
for
and being so
me.
Gracious.
Appreciate you, brother.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for the gems.
That's what's up.
Cheers.
Hiya, go check out the link in the bio and get to know more about Aaron Abdi. That's what's up. I hope you had a laugh and yeah, I hope you had a laugh and you also got to learn a little bit more about myself, because this dude decided that, yeah, that he was gonna flip the script and ask me a little bit more about myself. So thank you for, as usual, hanging in there and yeah, learning more about yourself on Unlock Your Soul Podcast. Go learn more about our social media by going to YouTube at Unlock Your Soul Podcast, on TikTok at Unlock Your Soul Podcast, and on Instagram at Unlock Your Soul Pod. Next week, teacher, musician, singer, independent artist, nothing comes close to the voice, the man, the living legend, Mr. Taita himself, Webby, is joining me next week. Here is a snippet. Wow. It's not easy. It's difficult.
I wrote a song for my kids, bro. And to do that, sorry to cut you short.
Yeah, it's okay.
But you've reminded me that when you say it's not easy, that sometimes you actually have to be uncomfortable to find the gold.
Mm-hmm.
Like to write this song, it's called Mshuma,
mm-hmm.
Candle.
Mm-hmm.
I was writing my thoughts sort of in a prophetic way,
yeah,
about what I believed about my kids. At that time, I only had one child, so my second one wasn't born yet.
Yeah.
But I was saying, utanga utawaka kama mshuma. You know, jua nakupenda, ombi langu kila siku ni la fanaka. I pray for your success. I pray that you become a person of integrity. I desire to see you succeed in life and be the version of yourself that you are meant to be, and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
To write that song, I had to go to a different environment.
Wow.
Like, I wasn't even in my house.
Wow.
I went to a spot in Lukenya, out in the wild. Well, it's just me and the car and my guitar and a notepad and a bit of writer's block.
Yeah.
And I knew I wanted to write something that my kids will listen to when they are 20.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd be like, I know exactly what my dad hopes for me.
For me.
Hoped for me.
Yes.
And to know that it is still true today.
And I can...